replied to optometry school, I did write Dr. Dickens, Harold Dickens, a note and said, yeah, I need a recommendation from you. And he had recommended that I would go back east and go to the New England College of Optometry. At that time, it was part of Boston College. So I did go. I wound up being accepted and went there for 4 years and became an optometrist. During that time, we used to have local Lions members, optometry students, and help them out doing the vision screenings in the community. And so I became aware of Lions through that process, through volunteering as a student in the optometry school. And finally moved to California, opened up an office in the Echo Park area. And at the same time, I was teaching at the Southern California College of Optometry. And after being in practice, by opening up my office for about 3 months or so, two gentlemen walked in. They were members of the local Lions Club in Echo Park and asked me if they were there representing the local Lions Club. And they wanted to know if I knew anything about Lions. And I said, well, I know a little bit because I did volunteer. And they said, well, that was great, you know. And so they invited me to come to the meetings, which in those days used to meet every week, every Wednesday at a restaurant in the local area there. And after my first meeting, I went ahead and joined in.
This is John Crumshaw for KPFK.
90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. After Presidential Proclamation 10949 was issued on June 4th, 2025, 19 countries were placed under travel bans or restrictions from the United States. This new travel ban imposed by the Trump administration officially went into effect on June 9th of this year. Under Trump's new travel ban, 12 nations are subjected to a total ban. Those nations are Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, the Republic of the Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. People from seven other nations are subjected to severe restrictions. Those countries are Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela. In addition to these 19 countries subjected to a travel ban, a State Department memo on June 17th of this year revealed the Trump administration's intention to expand the travel ban to include an additional 36 more countries. With the expansion yet to go into effect, national legislation restricting travel bans has piqued public interest. One such bill, the National Origin-Based Anti-Discrimination for Non-Immigrants Act, also known as the No Ban Act, has significant implications for executive power over immigration policy. The No Ban Act was initially proposed by Senator Chris Coons and Representative Judy Chu in 2017. Despite the passing in the House in 2021, it stalled in the Senate. It initially was responding to a series of travel bans proposed by the first Trump administration, dubbed Travel Bans 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. The No Ban Act was reintroduced in the current 119th congressional session, but has not yet reached a vote in the House or Senate. Now, the No Ban Act addresses the national debate of whether the executive branch has the authority to issue, as it has been, visa restrictions without congressional approval. To do this, the No Ban Act is comprised of several provisions. One, to mandate presidential consultation with the Secretary of Homeland Security and Congress when creating travel bans that affect visa applications and refugee admissions. Two, require specific evidence tailored to each country that explains specifically how the ban promotes public safety. And three, require more waiver processes for workers, families, and refugees. While national security and public safety are cited as main concerns for enacting travel bans, The truth is, the chances of American citizens being harmed by supposed foreign terrorists are highly improbable, as they account for 0.32% of all homicides in America from 1975 to 2022. Project Anar, the Afghan Network for Advocacy and Resources, has been one of the many organizations that have spoken out against the travel ban, stating, quote, "Nearly 4 years after the U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan, tens of thousands of Afghans, both in the United States and abroad, continue to remain in limbo and awaiting family reunification. The administration's June 4th, 2025 travel ban, which includes Afghan nationals, adds another layer to the betrayals they have faced from the U.S. government," end quote. Project Anar went on to state in their press release opposing the travel ban, quote, "Just a few weeks ago, on the same day that the administration welcomed white South Africans as refugees, it terminated temporary protected status for over 10,000 Afghans. This inconsistency is no mistake. It makes clear what we know, that the administration's policies are rooted in exclusion and white supremacy, not in any real concern for safety or security. Our community members, like all those impacted by this ban, have faced nothing but delays and loss of protections since January," end quote. Project Anar went on to conclude in their press release that, quote, "This administration seeks to leave our communities in fear and unstable, separated from their loved ones. And despite the administration's actions leaving many refugee and immigrant-serving organizations under-resourced, we will continue to work alongside all those impacted as they navigate pathways to permanent safety, because our communities deserve to live with safety and dignity and without the burdens of family separation, indefinite limbo, and countless barriers, whether through this travel ban, detention, deportation, or the countless other exclusionary and racist immigration policies targeting Muslim, Black, and all immigrant communities," end quote. So with us today to talk about Trump's new travel ban, the impact it has had thus far since its implementation in June, and what people should know about their rights in relation to this new travel ban, is our guest, Leila Ayoub, an immigration attorney and co-director of Project Anar, the Afghan Network for Advocacy and Resources, an Afghan community immigration justice organization formed and led by Afghan-American women, in partnership with other immigration lawyers that focuses on legal services, community education, and advocacy and engagement. Prior to co-founding Project Anar as an emergency response effort in August of 2021, Leila Ayoub was special projects attorney at RACES, where she coordinated advocacy efforts alongside asylum-seeking families and individuals detained in ICE custody in Texas. Through that work, she led collaborative campaigns, tracked detention conditions, assisted in litigation efforts, filed civil rights complaints, and directly represented families and individuals in immigration proceedings towards the goal of obtaining their release and ultimately abolishing detention. Welcome, Leila Ayoub, to Middle East in Focus. It's so great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So can you first provide, although I did a little bit of it in my intro, can you provide some background on the Trump administration's travel ban that went into effect on June 9th, where, as I mentioned, a total of 19 nations are subjected to it? Specifically, who does the travel ban directly and indirectly impact? And are there any updates we should be aware of regarding this travel ban since its implementation in June?
Yes. So, as you mentioned, there's 12 countries that have a complete ban and 7 additional countries that have many restrictions. The proclamation included this list of countries that were impacted, and the pathways that are affected are immigrant and non-immigrant visas. So there are some limited pathways that would, in theory, not be impacted, such as the refugee program, but there's already a refugee ban in place since January. There's certain other means that someone could use to come to the U.S. that might not be a visa, and those would not be impacted. But the vast majority of pathways that people use to come here to reunite with their family, to visit temporarily, to study here, to work here, these are all impacted by this ban. The ban does not impact people who are already here in the United States. It doesn't impact green card holders, citizens. It does impact family reunification pathways for many people. And there are certain exemptions, which include immediate family members of U.S. citizens and special immigrant visas for Afghans, and a few other very limited visa pathways. There's also, in theory, this option for obtaining an exemption. Well, not really an option, but there is authority designated to the State Department to issue a case-by-case national interest exemption. And what we're really seeing is that this is just amounting in blanket denials. Some people are not considered whatsoever and are outright determined to be ineligible for that exemption. And there's no clear explanation for what type of criteria the government is using to issue such an exemption. We've heard of examples like a soccer team being exempted, it's been reported, and other instances like that, which clearly would require a lot of advocacy and pressure and very unique circumstances, which are not necessarily accessible for the vast majority of people who are seeking these kinds of pathways to make it to the U.S. for family events, for a funeral, for visiting their loved ones, to study here, to work here. Like we mentioned in our statement, the Afghans that we've been working with, who as of this weekend, it's been 4 years that they've been separated from their loved ones, and they were promised that they'd be reunited. And now those families are subject to this ban. And the other sort of impacts that you can think about are students who might already be here. Now they are not able to go and visit their family. They're not able to travel without fear of not being able to return. And so it's really prolonging family separations.
Wow, I have so many follow-ups. Okay, so thank you for that very thorough explanation. So a few follow-up questions. Actually, one, for those who might not know, can you, I know you said that it restricts both immigrant and non-immigrant visas. Can you explain the difference? What's right. An immigrant versus non-immigrant visa?
So an immigrant visa is for someone who intends to immigrate to the U.S. and stay here. A non-immigrant visa is for temporary purposes, like studying here, working here, visiting here as a tourist, or for, you know, family or business purposes. So it's about the intention. And for immigrant visas that are family based, for example, those are already something where you have to prove those relationships. There's all these steps built into being able to access those pathways. And the same with non-immigrant visas. You have secured an education program, you've secured funding for it, and people have taken all these steps, and now suddenly they're not able to pursue that anymore.
So, okay, and then just to clarify, so the 12 countries that have a complete ban, folks from those 12 countries who are outside the U.S. cannot get at all either immigrant visas or non-immigrant visas unless they claim a national interest exception, which for the most part is not really being implemented by the administration, since they're just denying most of those claims or most of those requests for the national interest exception. Is that right?
That's right. There's no real way to request it. And in theory, everyone would be considered on a case-by-case basis. But there's no real criteria for it. There's no process for it. There's no waiver sort of process, which there was something of a waiver process even under the previous ban. But the reality is that people are just receiving a refusal of their visa, which leaves them in sort of a limbo status. So it's different from an outright denial, because the reason for the refusal is that they're not eligible because of this travel ban.
And I just want to remind the listeners what countries again are on this on the list of being completely banned altogether from any type of immigrant and non-immigrant visas to come to the U.S. And that is, again, Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, the Republic of the Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. Now, there's the seven countries that have not a total ban but restrictions. What is the main difference between those 12 countries that have the total ban and the seven countries that have restrictions but not a total ban? And those seven countries are Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela.
For the 12 countries, they have a full suspension of all immigrant and non-immigrant visas. With those exceptions I mentioned before, such as the special immigrant visa for Afghans. For the seven countries that have partial restrictions, those restrictions are focused on the non-immigrant pathways, which includes tourist visas and certain work and education visas. And there's also just a reduction in the number of visas available in the other category. So some of it is country specific, but it's a reduction, and I'll just mention that, you know, people might assume that a tourist visa is, you know, not a big deal, but these kinds of short-term non-immigrant visas are often the only option available to someone who has a dying loved one or a wedding or something like this, where it's a once-in-a-lifetime event, and they're losing out on that opportunity to be with their loved ones for that.
And I appreciate you saying that, because I want to get into what might be some of the common misconceptions people have about the travel ban and its actual impact and its practical impact on the lives of folks who are subjected to the ban. Before we go there, I just have two additional follow-ups from some of the things you already mentioned. So I know you said that it affects those who are outside the U.S. What about folks who are here in the U.S., who are, let's say they're undocumented? There is a pathway to status because they can get certain waivers in their applications for certain visas, but their country is on the travel ban list. If they are here in the U.S. seeking those kinds of visas, like an example is like the T visa, the trafficking visa, are they denied the ability to get that because of the travel ban, or can they still get those visas as long as they're here in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the ban does impact people who are already here in the U.S. in without status. It would not impact those who are already here and have green cards, but it is primarily an entry ban. So there's still pathways that people could pursue from within the U.S. So we think of it primarily as an entry ban, but the restrictions could certainly impact people who are already here without status.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you for that. And then, in terms of folks who are already here and let's say have a green card and want to travel on their green card, or even U.S. citizens who want to travel on their U.S. Passport to one of the countries listed on the travel ban, are there any travel restrictions for folks from the U.S. who have their status who might go to one of the countries on the travel ban list?
So the ban does not impact travel to that country, particularly. Yeah, if you have a green card. Or you have citizenship, you have the right to return to the U.S. on that status. And just visiting these countries doesn't interact in any way with the travel ban. But of course, with all these other immigration policies that the administration has been putting forth since January, there's just increased enforcement and scrutiny. And so it could certainly, lead to people facing increased questioning upon return. We've heard of people being held for extended periods of time. And of course, that extends to people who are not even visiting countries or of nationalities on the travel ban list. So there's more risks, I think, involved in a lot of travel now. But just visiting a country on this list does not prevent someone from being able to return to the U.S. if they have a green card or citizenship.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we are talking about Trump's new travel ban, the impact it has had thus far since its implementation in June, and what people should know about their rights in relation to this new travel ban with our guest, Leila Ayoub, an immigration attorney and co-director of Project Anar, the Afghan Network for Advocacy and Resources, an Afghan community immigration justice organization formed and led by Afghan-American women in partnership with other immigration lawyers that focuses on legal services, community education and advocacy and engagement. So now, if we could dive right into a misconception that I think people do have, which is, oh, well, it's not a big deal, for example, that people can't get a tourist visa. Well, it is a big deal because, as you mentioned, it could be the only way, for example, that someone could visit a dying loved one who's in the United States. So can you talk about what are the most common misconceptions that you believe the public has regarding this new travel ban?
Sure. So we often do also have, questions that are coming in that just visiting this country will mean that you're impacted by the travel ban, but that's not the case. I think that it might appear that, people who really need to be able to come here will have a way to do that because there is an opportunity to be exempt from this. But the reality is that discretion is not being used in a way to give people an exemption. It's just not happening. People are not getting waivers of any sort. There's also this language within the proclamation that this is temporary in some way, that it's an initial 90-day period, and then there will be periodic reviews and that countries can be removed from this list. But that's really not what we see. We can look to the previous Trump administration also, that they reissued the travel ban under that administration multiple times and added countries, took away countries, but consistently there was this just exclusionary ban on a number of Muslim majority countries, African countries, Latin American countries, and it just kind of persisted. So this really is something that we don't think is going to go away anytime soon, and certainly not without a lot of additional pressure. There were certain pathways excluded, like the special immigrant visa, or, you know, this doesn't specifically list refugees, but those pathways are already, well, for one, for refugees, there's already a ban in place. We've heard statements, I'll say, from the administration that refugees are not necessarily exempted from this. For the special immigrant visa holders, for Afghans, there's so many, that is a pathway that exists for Afghans who worked alongside the U.S. Military and government and contractors and all these things. But there's many other categories of Afghans who did that kind of work or who were advocates civil society, and they are not eligible for this program. So there's such a massive impact that this has already had. And I think it's been hard to see that because there have been so many other horrible exclusionary immigration policies. There has been such an increase in immigration enforcement and arrests and deportations, and all of this has kind of drowned out the impact of this, I think, but it is already having a huge impact on so many people in our communities.
So we're already running out of time. So I'm definitely going to have you come back. And hopefully we can do another follow-up conversation to go even further in depth. But just two last questions that I'm hoping I can get to. But this first one is, can you give us some specifics on what Project ANAR has seen and experienced in terms of the impact on those communities subjected to the ban, such as on the Afghan communities, both here and abroad? And within that, can you, because you've repeatedly referred to the existing ban on refugees that's already in place, can you expand and explain for people what that existing ban looks like on refugees that's already in place, in addition to this travel ban and its impact?
Yes. So in January, the Trump administration pretty immediately issued an executive order suspending the U.S. refugee admissions program. And that means that so many people who had been waiting for years in third countries pursuing the refugee process suddenly were without that pathway, and they have no way to resettle in the U.S. anymore. And that has had a massive impact globally. It's impacted so many people who were already in the process of traveling to the U.S. or had already been in touch with resettlement agencies, all these kinds of things. They had to go through months and years of interviews, and now that's no longer an option. And so the only way that someone could seek humanitarian protections here is if they reach here in person and seek asylum here. And then they've also really been making every effort to restrict asylum access. So it's this broad effort to restrict humanitarian protections and, of course, all immigration pathways. And the impact that we have seen is that many of the people that we work with include young women who don't have an opportunity to seek an education, and they were able to secure programs here. And now that the travel ban is in place, they can't pursue that anymore. This has also resulted already in visa refusals for the spouses and children of people who came here in 2021. And there's no exception for those kinds of family members. They now have to wait for years, maybe, until they can live together, see each other. And it's, you know, our community members, they still have hope. But it's just left a lot of people wondering, how long will it be until I see my family? And the other impact is that we've immediately saw that so many people who are already here in the U.S.